Welcome to another chat between former Pakistani Army officer Adil Raja from a venerable family of Pakistani military and Tony Gosling. I'm a former BBC journalist. I now do a weekly program here in Bristol in the UK. I'm not sure entirely if Adil would like to be in Pakistan or London, but he doesn't actually have a choice since the military government in Pakistan has insisted that if he returns, they will face several life sentences. But that is just simply for expressing his opinion and what many would say is the truth about, particularly about Imran Khan and the way that the democratic will of the Pakistani people has been undermined by the Pakistani military in collaboration with the United States. So that's a brief introduction to Adil. But I'd like to talk about a couple of things with you today. One is the role of the Pakistani military in the de brokering this so-called deal between America and Iran. But I think we should first start with your own troubles because you have been a very much a victim of the Pakistani military, even though you're here in London. So can you bring us up to date?
Yeah, Tony, I've been a third generation Pakistan Army officer. I've served a fighting arm of the Pakistan Army. I was a Armored Corps officer, tank regiment officer. I've served in internal security duties on counterterrorism roles as well. And I'm a war wounded officer. And I took voluntarily retirement with full earned benefits and. 2017, after almost 21 years of service, and I started my career as a journalist. Before that, I started a successful business as well in the real estate sector of Pakistan, and I was very much fond of writing op-eds in the English dailies of Pakistan because I did my master's and I was doing my MPhil in the international relations and history, and well, that was sort of a side hustle at that time once I was in Pakistan, but that made me a bit of a notable, as they used to call it in the days of Twitter, not X. So that got me a blue tick on my Twitter as well. So I would express my opinions, and I was also working with the in collaboration with the Pakistani Ex-Servicemen Society as their spokesperson and as the director of the media cell, and I would coordinate certain narrative building exercises of the inter-services public relations. That is the media arm of the Pakistan Army and the inter-services intelligence as well, mind you. So yeah, I was doing all that while in Pakistan, but at the same time, I was supporting democracy in Pakistan, and that's why I was doing it, because I was supporting Imran Khan as my member parliament. Before Imran Khan, mind you, Tony, nobody believed in democracy in my country. They always believed that governments are not elected but selected. But once Imran Khan came into power before, and he's brought his party to election, and he was my local MP. So we, for the first time in the country, at least as far as I'm concerned, all my friends and family concerned, we went out and we voted for the first time in the history. And mind you, that was in 2018. So that was the first time the majority of Pakistanis, especially in the middle classes, they went out and they voted because they started believing in system. They started believing in democracy because Imran Khan was a man of principle. They knew he's not going to take the military's dictation, and he will definitely do what's better for the people of Pakistan, not for international Western interest as the military does. So we supported Imran Khan, obviously, and in 2022, there was an alleged regime change operation against him. We knew that the military is planning that. Being an insider, I knew all this. I spoke against it, and that became a cardinal sin, as they say, metaphorically, for me. And well, my own military, of which I had served as a third generation officer, as a war wounded officer, as a decorated officer, they came after me for the freedom of expression or supporting democracy and not supporting the military dictatorship. And they, They destroyed my business. They destroyed my life, my livelihood. My wife and my kids were already living in London. I was shuttling between London and Islamabad. Well, I had to almost overnight escape Islamabad in in April 2022, and ever since I've not been allowed to return to my country because they court-martialed me in absentia. Because then I became a full-time journalist. Once I reached London, I became a member of the National Union of Journalists. I started speaking for democracy. I started exposing the corruption of the military dictatorship in my country, the fascism in my country. Well, that became a sin. And well, as I've already told you, they court-martialed me in absentia, irrespective of being a retired officer. I mean, they court-martialed me in 2023 and announced a 14-year rigorous imprisonment against me in 2024. And afterward, they also then made certain various, cases of sedition against me. And most recently, they gave me two life sentences. That's 14 years each, plus 15 or 14 years life sentence. In total, I've been awarded 99 years of rigorous imprisonment in Pakistan for practicing journalism. And they came after me in the UK as well. I've faced a libel case at the hands of the Pakistani spy chief. And here in the UK, the libel tourism capital of the world. And they also got me arrested and investigated on counter-terrorism charges in the UK for incitement of violence in Pakistan because of my journalism. Nothing came off it. And, it ended with a no further action. And I got attacked. Most recently, 11 people got arrested because of attacking me in the UK in my London house. And eight of them got charged. And they have been denied
Okay, so
bail.
this is not an online attack or journalistic attack.
No,
This is a
that's.
physical face-to-face.
Yeah, this is a physical attack which has been classified as the Chief Magistrate of the Westminster Crown Court as hitman for hire for violence case in London, mind you. So it's all going on. And the most recent, like today, the freelance magazine of the National Union of Journalists published a story about me in which I've been asked to toe the line, or else an alleged agent of US agents are asking me to create a pro-Trump, anti-Iran narrative. Maybe I don't know how to put it rightly, but yeah, they were trying to cultivate me as an asset, as an alleged asset. So it's all going on. It seems pretty. If you're hearing it for the first time, you might well think, Tony, that this guy, me, I'm definitely paranoid. But if a guy is paranoid, he's not facing 99 years of rigorous imprisonment, and the Pakistani Home Minister is not coming to the highest corridors of power in London and asking for my extradition in exchange for the for in exchange for the grooming gang members of the Rochdale gang. Just imagine that. How low could they, fall? My own country and my own regime in my country. So yeah, they did ask for my extradition as well. They've put me in Schedule 4. They think I'm a terrorist for practicing journalism. It's all going on. It's all on record. It's all been published. So I'm paying the price
So
of being a
just
para-ratios.
explain the link to Rochdale. This is pretty, it sounds pretty low.
Yeah, Tony, because they believe that they asked for my extradition alongside an extradition of my colleague, who also got attacked, and who's a human rights lawyer based in Cambridge. So his name is Shahzad Akbar. Our extradition was demanded from the British government. British government had already investigated me for 9 months and on the alleged complaint of the Pakistani state, Pakistani government. And that was the counter-terrorism police who investigated me and found nothing to charge me with. So they just ended the case with a no further action. In fact, they compensated me for my loss as well. Very nice of them. But most recently, the Pakistani government, they declared me they wanted my extradition, and the UK government said he's done nothing wrong. So they, as per the Dropsite News report, which was I mean, later on confirmed that the Pakistani government said, all right, the British government, the Labour government, has been trying to extradite these British Pakistani grooming gang members who have been stripped off their British nationality. So, so these Pakistani grooming gang leaders, in fact, the gang leaders, they played very smart. They surrendered the Pakistani nationality as well. And they said, listen, we've got no nationality and we've got fear of life. You cannot extradite us to Pakistan. So the British government has been asking the Pakistani government to take them back and provide them with travel documents. But the Pakistani government, the Pakistani regime, the alleged, illegal Pakistani regime, they've been giving different kind of, demands for taking these grooming gag members back. And then in the latest episode, they said, all right, we will take them back if you give us Adil Raja, that's me, the journalist, and Shehzad Akbar, the human rights lawyer, if you
God, I
exchange
mean
them, yeah, if you also extradite them,
that's a very low thing to do, to say an innocent man who is causing trouble for us because he's telling the truth. We want him, and then you can have these grooming gang individuals, a sort of a prisoner swap type scenario. Well, I'm very glad to say the British government have said no. I'm amazed actually, because sometimes they do these little deals. So maybe we can move on now to just look at Pakistan's role in the world, because you're already hinting here that the United States and the Pakistani military are quite close. Would you say that the Pakistani military are running the country in the interests of the country still, or another state maybe?
Only the Pakistani military has made Pakistan a client state for the USA, and the Pakistani military, for them, the foremost interest is their own. And once I say their own, it means the generals who are running the military, their own interest, their personal interest supersedes the national interest. But then there are certain matters of national interest which simply cannot be overlooked. Like, for example, the latest episode where Pakistan became a member of the President Trump's Board of Peace, and there was a demand that the Pakistan army should be deployed at Gaza for as a peacekeeping, force under the Israeli Defense Forces command, obviously. But the Pakistani military refused to do that because the pulse was against it. So there is a system still at work, which does not allow, because the Pakistan generals running the military and running the country, they've got their own constituency, and that is the Pakistani army itself. So the pulse of the Pakistan army does matter, and only where that pulse gives, decides that the manpower of the Pakistan army decides that, well, this is something which is against our interest. So that is considered the national interest. So in that manner, well, they're looking after the national interest, but what they define national interest is actually the military's interest. So there is definitely a contradiction there, I would say. But well, it is what it is. And for example, in the case of Iran, Pakistani army, the Pakistani military has signed a defense pact with Saudi Arabia. Now, Saudi Arabia came under attack from Iran. So as in accordance with the defense contract, Pakistan should have attacked Iran. And there was a lot of pressure on Pakistan to attack Iran, but the Pakistani military did not do that because the pulse in the military is that, well, that is not in our interest, not in the country's interest, obviously, because there is a huge Shia population in the country. And irrespective of Shia or Sunni, irrespective of the sectarian divide, the Pakistanis are unanimous in the support for Iran. That is how it is. So in that way as well, better sense did prevail.
Yeah, well,
So
that's good to hear. I
it is
would
a mix of
also
the.
let me compare what's going on with this European Defence Union and the European Defence Agency, because there's been a big attempt by Ursula von der Leyen and the European Union to get a similar kind of deal between the various European armies and the nation state armies, so that under this deal, the European Defence Agency, what they would do is security coordination, military coordination, defense policy. As part of this deal, it would mean that It would rotate around, but one nation's army would be in overall control of several other nations' army. Now, the European armed forces, the various armed forces, are not happy with. So, for example, the Dutch, the Belgian, and the British army would be under the command of the German army, and they're not happy for this to take place. This is one of the reasons why the European Defence Union has stalled. So it seems that even if the nation state itself is breaking down, going bankrupt, and having all sorts of problems with its democracy, at least the armed forces are still making sure that there's some integrity to the nation state.
That's true, Tony. That's very well, and that's how it should be. But if the nation state prioritizes the interest of the military, and if the military, undermine the interest of an elected government, like in the case of Pakistan, the 2024 elections, as per the Commonwealth reports, were rigged, as per Pakistan's own PIL-DAT reports, were rigged. The European Union is still afraid to issue the election monitoring report for the 2024 elections for Pakistan, allegedly because Pakistanis are providing ammunition to the Ukrainians, so they don't want to annoy the Pakistanis. They don't want to, they don't want to them to. Obviously, they've got leverage over Europe as well. So the EU is not releasing that report, but the Commonwealth report got leaked. And it proved that there were election rigging, which is common knowledge in Pakistan. Even the Pakistani child knows that the elections are rigged. And once elections are rigged by your own military, and there are video evidence available of that same fact, and then the people asking for the democratic rights, they're abducted. There are extrajudicial killings on. And against political dissent, and then the most popular leader is put in jail on, fictitious charges. And anyone who speaks up, my own example is right there in front of you. My only crime is speaking truth to power, speaking truth to my generals, and they don't like a major. That's me, a major speaking, showing them the mirror. So that is where, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And Pakistani military has got absolute power in that country, and they gain that power by being a client for Washington D.C. for the U.S. deep
Well,
state, and now
this is.
since Trump is the deep state, so they're working for Trump. And so that does not work for the common people of Pakistan,
No,
for the
well,
nation
look,
state.
this is what's so worrying, is we're seeing a general drift away from responsible democratic government towards the military being the norm. Even as if you look at what's been going on at the United Nations, with the Security Council ever since the Second World War being dominant over the General Assembly. So the military at the Security Council, the Greek superpowers, have got the whip hand. Whereas the General Assembly at the UN, which is all of the separate nations, are subordinate. They're not allowed to make these big decisions. So you've got it's all top, sort of topsy-turvy, and it has been for many years, but now that seems to be playing out more and more, to the extent to which the United States, under Donald Trump, has got the audacity to launch an unprovoked illegal war. And to try to pretend that the Iranians are the dangerous ones. They may make nuclear weapons, so we're going to have to stop them. None of this makes any sense in terms of international law, or actually from a military point of view, where there's no actual plan. So, can you just explain to me what you make of this attempt by Trump to launch a war, and maybe, whether or not it's actually other countries like Israel or the UK that may be egging him on?
Tony, there is an obvious breakdown of international law, and there is an obvious breakdown of international or humanitarian values or human rights to begin with. And instead of progressing as humanity, we are regressing, and we are actually looking at the days of the Roman Empire, maybe, and the Americans think they are the new Trump, at least the Trump administration, the MAGA camp thinks that they are the New Roman Empire. There's a split in between them itself because of Iran war. Fine, but They are in fact moving backwards. Look at what ICE is doing in the USA, and look at what is happening in the US and its client state. The rule of might is right, you know? So that is being applied everywhere. And that's what we have seen in Iran. That's what we are seeing in Gaza. So that is actually what's going on. That if you're the mighty one, well, the rest everyone are supposed to obey you. The age old, rather the disgusting racist theories are being, openly preached. So this Epstein class ruling, I mean, they were always ruling, but now they are quite out in the open. So now they're quite out in the open, and I think it happened because of the Epstein files, because it's wag the dog scenario is being played, and that is why they have come out quite openly about what they were preaching behind closed doors is now out in the open, and it is a breakdown of international law, and we can actually see it. And the working of the United Nations as well, and in the working of the United Nations Human Rights Organizations. I mean, whatsoever they are saying are being rubbished by nation states. Whatsoever, for example, Amnesty International, International Human Rights Foundation, Human Rights Watch have repeatedly talked about fascism in Pakistan, what's happening in Gaza. Well, they're all being rubbished aside, and they're not being, nobody really cares in the nation state system about the Human Rights Organization or about what United Nations is saying. And rule again, the rule of might is right is being applied. Why? Because of one catalyst, I would say, or incident of the Epstein files. Well, that is one of the reasons. The other reasons is the theory of end-time fascism. The end-time fascist, or if you want to call them the Epstein class, or if you want to call them the billionaires class, they are ruling the world, and they take us as cattle. The rest of us are cattle. We are expendables for them, and they just want to go their own way. They have created their own safe havens, and they want to, just carry on doing what they're doing, and what they're doing is making profit at the cost of
Well,
humanity, and
there's
that
lots
is
of
what is
people
going
make
on.
money at this sort of thing, but I wonder whether maybe these people think they rule the world and they may have a bit of a rude awakening.
It is quite possible, But Tony, the recent examples are not very heartening, discouraging indeed. Once, because of insider trading of during Iran war, people close to President Trump and in his administration, as per the Financial Times report, even his Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, they've made billions of dollars because of insider tradings. So for them, their values, well, and they preach the values of Christianity, but for them, actually, their religion is money. And that is where we're heading. I mean, it is quite crystal clear. I mean, to any student of international relations and to any student of geopolitics, it's quite clear, Tony, what's actually going on. So, about rude awakening, I don't know. Well, I am a believer, and I believe that everything is happening for a reason. And I believe that at the end of the day, in the battle of good versus evil, the good would prevail. That is a belief. And if you've got no belief, and if you've got nothing, then what have you got to live for? So that is my point of view.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is, of course, good does not prevail if people fail to act. And there are
That's
many
true.
people in authority, whether they're in the military, the diplomatic service, in journalism, this is obviously in politics and finance. There are many individuals who are not actually AI, real human beings, who can see what's happening and can act. And what many of them have seemed to have been trained to do is to just turn the other cheek, look the other way, actually. Well, turn the other cheek, maybe not the right analogy, but to look the other way and to allow evil things to happen and say, well, I wasn't watching, I wasn't seeing when this happened. So there is a sort of banality about the way these evil agendas. But anyway, look, I wonder, look at Trump for me, will you? Take a look at him for a minute, because none of what he's saying seems to make any sense at all. When he's saying there's a ceasefire, the Straits of Hormuz are Trump Straits, they are closed one minute, they're open the next, and he's going to destroy civilization. So how can it be that somebody who seems to be in charge of the US military as the chief, the US military chief, can come out with like contradictory rhetoric and plans within one single sentence.
Tony, let's talk about the US military and Trump being in charge of the US military. Never in history, dozens of US generals have been sacked and fired without any reasonable explanation, as is the case in Trump administration, the recent Trump administration. I mean, they came on an agenda of dismantling the deep state, which is quite noble, fine. But deep state, to an extent, is a check and balance system to rise of a mad king, I would say. And that check and balance has been removed. And the judge adjutant general of the US in Pentagon of the US Army as well is being reportedly pressured. And this is the ABC and the affiliated press, ABC News and affiliated press being reporting this, which Trump called the fake news media. Well, it's not the fake news media, man. They're reporting it. They are in the US. You can go and sue them, but you're not suing them. You love to sue the newspaper publication. You have sued the BBC even. So why don't you go and sue your own country, your own newspapers? You won't do that because what they're saying is true, obviously. So they're also saying that it is unprecedented. What Pete Hegseth is doing to the US military. And the US military is, I would say, not revolting, but they're definitely on higher moral grounds, at least in this instance, once dozens of US generals are being removed from their post or sidelined. So why is this happening? Because they're speaking, standing up to President Trump. It is going on, definitely. That's what's going on over there. So there is, but the way President Trump is working, we never expected him to work this way. I mean, his previous term was also quite different from this one. And this term, the allegations of corruption on him and his family and his friends are coming forth every other day. And he is running the USA as his personal kingdom, personal fiefdom. And the evidence is that we are in day 42 of the Iran war. And he has not, as per the Constitution of the US, sought or he hasn't got a congressional approval for this war. It's a full-fledged war going on. So he's running it like a kingdom. So if US is a kingdom, if there is no democracy in the US, because if there is democracy, then the First Amendment calls for the freedom of expression. But he is actually threatening, journalists and newspaper publications to be, their license to be canceled and for journalists to be, taken to task, words to the effect. So what's going on in the US today? And what's happening in the US states? It's unheard of. It's unprecedented.
It is unprecedented. I wonder, because there have been a couple of military operations on Iran. There's the over the Easter weekend, we had the supposed downing of an F-15. One of the pilots escaped, another one didn't. So it'd be interesting. And lots, I think it was 10 US aircraft were destroyed, although we're being told that that was done deliberately by the Americans. It'd be very interesting to hear what you've got to say about that. But then there was also this Iranian operation against the Saudi Prince Sultan Air Base, which seems to have destroyed quite a lot of US aircraft, serious, like about $2 billion worth of US aircraft. So can you just take us through those two one by one? What and maybe any others that you want us to talk about? Because it looks to me as if we're not being told the truth by the Western press at all of what's going on.
Trump has himself fallen into the escalation trap in the case of Iran war. And the trap was laid for him by none other but his beloved Bibi Netanyahu, who went to the White House, and ultimately President Trump himself had to tell it. He has to tell the tale. And he told everyone that it was Benjamin Netanyahu who came to the Situation Room of the White House and who said that, listen, you go and attack Iran. And within a couple of weeks, the Iranian military would be degraded. They won't be able to fight back. The nuclear capability would be destroyed completely. They won't, be counterattacking, and Strait of Hormuz won't be closed. None of that, none of that, was true. And we are in day 42, 43, and exactly the opposite happened. Iran's capabilities have been damaged severely, but they are still sustaining a counterattack. Their strategy of fighting this war, which was started by Israel and USA, was never to defend themselves. That's why they have taken the hit in their home inside Iran. But they have been continuously attacking the US military bases with highly accurate intelligence and very well guided systems. The drone attacks and the ballistic missiles attacks have been continuously going on. They have re been reduced. They've been their military capabilities have been clearly damaged, but they are still able to sustain an attack and to attack the Gulf countries and the US bases. And you're given the example of Prince Sultan base in Saudi Arabia. They are attacking Israel and they are attacking at will. And there have been precision strikes on drone factories in Israel, military facilities in Israel, and the so-called Iron Dome system has, it has been exhausted. The air defense system of US itself, the Patriot defense system, has been exhausted. Why? Because the Iranians are fighting a 21st century war, and the US war machine is designed to fight a 20th century war. I mean, if you're shooting down a $20,000 drone with a 4 million Patriot missile, so who is winning actually? Even if the drone does not hit its target. And now, once you are intercepting these missiles, so the debris of the interceptor is coming down to the targets, and the targets are highly combustible. And for example, the gas facilities, the oil and gas facilities, they catch fire very easily. So, strategically speaking, tactically, the US and Israel are winning fine. Strategically, Iran is the winner in this war. Strategically, because they have been able to sustain the attack with the Chinese support, of course, and with the
Well, look,
Russian
we're not
intelligence
getting to
support, of
see a lot of
course.
this on the mass media in the West. We're not getting to see, but there was distribution by the Saudis of all these photographs of the destroyed AWACS. Now, one of those will cost you almost $1 billion. It was completely ruined by the Iranians, and this is unprecedented for the Saudis to actually release the photos.
That's true. That's true. But the Saudis released their photo because President Trump, in his usual style, because he wasn't happy with the, he wasn't happy with the Prince Mohammed bin Salman. He went ahead and he said he kissed my ass. He was kissing my ass. And previously there were articles planted that he wanted us to go and attack Iran, and he wants us to continue. Whereas, yes, they were party to it, but it was the Israelis who went after Iran and who asked President Trump to go and attack them. So, obviously, and once the Saudis did not want to openly engage with the Iranians, and that was the de design all along, to make it a sectarian dispute and make it a Shia-Sunni dispute and make all the Arab kingdoms fight Iran, whereas they've been paying trillions of dollars to the US to defend them. So it's US job, they think, to defend them because they've paid them the money. So since because of that kind of seesaw situation, I would say, President Trump made those remarks that Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, was kissing my ass. So in response, the very next day, the pictures of billions of dollars of loss of this highly sophisticated planes, which are totally foreign number in US military. The destruction of one of that AWACS system, AWACS plane, was issued in the high definition pictures were released. So yeah, that was a I would believe the repercussions of President Trump's remarks about Prince Mohammed bin Salman.
Yeah,
That's
interesting. I
what
mean, what
it
we've been
was.
seeing is things like satellite photos. This was the first time that have been released to the press, pictures of high definition pictures of these massive American losses. I mean, in terms of finance, thankfully, not too many servicemen are killed. But of course, this will be in the minds of all these servicemen. We are right in the front line here with this kind of maniacal president that doesn't actually have a plan. Is it possible to launch a war like this with no plan?
Definitely, there was no plan because, as I told you, they thought that the war would be over like Venezuela in 2 to 3 days to
Well,
maximum 2 weeks.
I'm surprised that anybody. I mean, Trump, it may be, is surrounded by sycophants or liars. I can remember a Gary O'Donoghue BBC interview with Trump last year, about in the autumn sometime, where he asked Trump about Putin. He said, "Do you trust Putin?" And there was a long pause, and Trump says, "Actually, I don't trust anyone." And you get the idea that he's a kind of sad, childlike, isolated figure who has only got disinformation to go on. But anyway, look, on Pakistan's role, what do you think is Pakistan's role at the moment as a mediator? Because what I've heard, and maybe you can corroborate this or not, is that the speech given by the Pakistan leader about the peace talks, brokering peace between the United States and Iran, was actually drafted by the Americans, and he just read it out like a script.
That's true. There is evidence to it that the Twitter post, X post, was sent to him as a draft, and he posted it as a draft, and he later amended it. So that did come from the White House, and there's a New York Times story about it as well. But honestly, Tony, the USA, America has got various blind states, and Pakistan is one of them. They would all love to do this kind of a job. And in the process, earn brownie points at Washington, D.C., and legitimize their illegitimate rule domestically. So they would love to do that. Having said that, Pakistan has got genuine stakes in the peace process in Iran because Pakistan is the immediate neighbor of Iran. Now, mind you, there is no embassy of Iran in Washington, D.C., but there is the Pakistani embassy in Washington, D.C. has got an Iranian desk, Iran Interest Office, and they are the one who actually, play the role of mediator in day-to-day affairs between the State Department and the Iranian government anyway. So, and because they are the next-door neighbors and they've been having their tussles and they've been having their problems, but because of deep-rooted the Shia, very well-read and very influential Shia population in Pakistan, and because that is one of the aspects. There are trade relations between Iran and Pakistan and smuggling relations in which oil smuggling plays the biggest role, irrespective of the US sanctions. There is a huge oil smuggling, network which is being operated by the Pakistani military itself. And even the Pakistani military dictator, the de facto ruler, Asim Munir, he's married into a very influential Shia family. He's himself being a Sunni, is married into a Shia family, which is directly, not related, but on very good terms with the Khomeini family. So obviously, there are very deep-rooted links, the social links, trade links between Iran and Pakistan. And if, I mean, that's why Pakistan did not attack Iran. Irrespective of having a defense agreement with Saudi Arabia, and irrespective of the UAE pressurizing Pakistan to attack Iran, and well, once Pakistan refused, they asked for the loan back, and Pakistan is living from one bailout to another. It's a big deal for them to return the money, So, but they are returning the money instead of attacking Iran because it is not in. Now, this is where again, the U.S., the military's interest, and the national interest. They are the same, so obviously it is being implemented. So, as far as peace is concerned, this peace would be definitely, this role of a mediator would definitely be used to legitimize an illegitimate regime. Fine, but Pakistan do need this peace because what Trump is heading towards is a nuclear Armageddon, and he once he warns that it will be an end of a civilization. So he's seriously contemplating a nuclear attack on Iran. Now, irrespective of what would be the chain reaction to that, what Chinese would do to Taiwan, or what Russians would do to Ukraine, or what North Korea would do to South Korea, or what India or Pakistan would do, forget about that. But if a nuclear bomb gets dropped in Iran, the consequences or the fallout would be faced primarily by Pakistan itself. And then followed by India. And so it is in Indian interest that peace should prevail, and in Afghanistan and Bangladesh, and of course the wider Arab world as well. So peace is the logical way forward. And it is in the interest of the wider world. And Pakistan playing that part comes naturally to it. The problem with that is, Tony, that once that role as a mediator gets weaponized, as I've already said, at the cost of reputation, to legitimize an illegitimate regime, a US client state, practically. And President Trump has been doing that, you know. He has been legitimizing the present regime by calling the de facto ruler the field marshal as his favorite field marshal, and so on and so forth. So that is a problem there. But I mean, irrespective of that problem, the Pakistani mediation efforts are very important, and to establishing peace in Iran, in between Iran and, you know, the USA is very important, and the role is being played by the Pakistani diplomats, not by the Pakistani military. Of course, they are going to get the credit. They will take the credit. The illegitimate regime, the puppet prime minister, would try to take the credit. It is actually the very professional Pakistani diplomatic corps which is spearheading the process, and we hope to God that the process does succeed. I hope to God the process does succeed, because at the end of the day, if the process does not succeed, the world is looking at a global catastrophe in which people in Africa and developing countries, in my own country, Pakistan, even in India, even in the rest of the world, in Southeast Asia, people will die of hunger, Tony, because there is a molecule shortage, there's fertilizer shortage. And of course, the post-AI revolution and you know, the modern world based on the chip industry, it also requires you know, helium, and helium is not being produced enough for the construction of the supercomputers. So a lot is at stake because of
Well,
this war
I mean,
and
that's
because of the
absolutely
closure of
right.
the Strait of Hormuz.
Well, we've got a society now, a civilization now, which is actually very fragile. And it wouldn't take a lot to topple things, as you've been talking about, particularly when it comes to a lack of energy, a lack of food, can be incredibly catastrophic, because the nations of the world have become so dependent on international trade, and the Straits of Hormuz represents, in a way, just like the Bab el-Mandeb represents, a blockage in the system that the whole world depends on. It's like the lifeline is blocked. But anyway, look, you've mentioned a couple of times this idea of Armageddon. Is this, do you think, real? Because, you know, when Trump makes a pronouncement, it seems to me that the world is just left guessing as to whether he's just doing this as part of his art of the deal, to try and break a di broker a deal by bullying, and by brinksmanship, like he's doing a property deal in Manhattan or something, and now he's doing it on the entire world stage. And at any time, of course, something could actually happen when he's making these brinksmanship type pronouncements that he does. How do we understand this kind of new world that we're in now, where it could actually be that a massive war is started, an enormous economic collapse, which sends the entire world into an Armageddon-like turmoil?
The entire war was started on false pretenses. We've already discussed those. They thought that it'll be a Venezuela-like situation, it'll be over within a couple of weeks, and instead of that, we are in the sixth or seventh week, and well, nothing is coming out of it, and Iran is still standing, and they're still fighting, and they're saying, "We have won." America, irrespective of President Trump, saying like hundreds of times that we have won, we've already won. Well, if they've won, Iran would not have. Iran should. Iran's missile attack and drone attacks should have stopped, but they haven't stopped. And Strait of Hormuz would have opened, but it hasn't opened. Instead, Iran is collecting toll from the Strait of Hormuz to an effect of around 140 million per day, as per the reports. So obviously, they have not won the war. What they and that creates a desperate situation, and desperate situation calls for desperate measures. And President Trump, as you've rightly said, is his mindset is like the Godfather mindset of the of Manhattan or of New York. And if everything comes down to a question of prestige, to global prestige, that is what the question is. That is what's actually at stake right now. The U.S. position as the global superpower and the unipolar world order is at stake right now. So if it comes to that, so obviously any single miscalculation can lead to a nuclear catastrophe, and it'll be followed by chain reaction. And the problem is that what are the facts? Look at the facts, because the U.S. Airborne Nuclear Command, the looking mirror, the airplane, they call it the looking glass or looking mirror, that has been airborne ever and for the last 40, 41 days. And the U.S. military is already overstretched. And as you rightly pointed out, the U.S. military is, it's an aging military, and it is being designed for the 20th century war. And it is the first time it has been literally challenged by anyone, particularly for such a long time. And obviously, Iran could not have done it alone. Iran has got the Russian support, and they've got the Chinese support. So effectively, it will become a World War III scenario in which, well, I don't believe anybody would come to the aid of Iran if the US actually does nuke Iran. But China will then go for Taiwan, and Russia will then go for Ukraine. And they would not like to drag it on, and a precedence would be created, and a very dangerous precedence would be created. And now, to the final part of the question, that is it part of the art of deal by President Trump? Well, in these kind of situations, this is not a New York property deal going south. It is the geopolitical stage at which the stakes are very high. Anybody can make a mistake. And as a result of that mistake, nuclear catastrophe may occur. So yeah, it's a very sensitive situation. But one thing I can say for sure is that the U.S. has got the nuclear option on the table for sure.
Yeah, well, look,
But the only thing,
but
only thing that just stopped them from using it so far is the expected reaction by the other nuclear power, because the last time they used it, they were the only nuclear power who had that kind of a nuclear weapon. Now there are so many others. There are six others or seven others who may use it or may not use it. So obviously, it's a very precarious situation.
I mean, all I'd say, I think, along these lines is I think people have got to not be too surprised if things really kick off. You wake up one morning to find that nuclear weapons have been used, or else possibly biological weapons, chemical weapons, this sort of thing, and that borders are shifting very fast. I think it's important that we're all content in our own souls with our own existence, and can face death with some sort of understanding of what life is really all about, and are not surprised by this, because they use these sorts of big surprises like the 9/11 attacks, etc., in order to try and bamboozle people. So that's all I'd say. Have you got anything to say to wind up, Adil?
Tony, it's a very, I mean, people say that, well, Trump is using this threat of nuclear of wiping out, ending the civilization as a threat to bully Iran. But the people who are much more powerful than Trump, the end time fascist, they're actually preparing for this kind of a scenario for quite some time now. So why they've been preparing for this kind of scenario? Because they believe that nuclear Armageddon is a possibility, definitely. I mean, aliens are not going to attack the world. So obviously the humans would destroy each other, and they've got a destructive force at the disposal, and unstable people, as we have noted down in power, currently in power, if they are given a free rein and if they're encouraged enough, they may go ahead. And if Iran does not agree to the terms of surrender, and if they, like, there are points in where President Trump says that they won't be allowed to enrich uranium, but they want to keep enriching uranium to run their power plants, electricity power plants. And then they're saying that the ballistic missile program is off the table, but Trump wants it on the table, and he wants it to be diminished, to practically finish, in fact. right? So they're saying that's off the table. And now he wants the Strait of Hormuz to go back to pre-28 February position. Well, the Iranians are not going to have it because now they've got a taste of it, and they're earning 140 million pound per day, dollars per 140 million dollars per day, and they are testing an alternative financial system in which the Chinese CIP system is being used, and their central bank digital currency is being used. The e-yuan is being used. So now the petrodollar has got a competitor. That's a petroyuan. So the game have changed. And it is not the Iran or the Chinese or the Russians that started it. It is the American themselves.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it,
They've
how
started it.
Trump seems to have sealed his own empire's fate. Not the greatest emperor, maybe a kind of Emperor Nero character who was the final Roman emperor. Maybe that's where the way we'll have to see Trump. Anyway, Adil, can you just let listeners know whereabouts they can find you and follow you online?
Yeah, so my website is soldierspeaks.org. It's soldierspeaks.org. And you can find me on X at soldierspeaks. You can find me on YouTube at soldierspeaksenglish and soldierspeaksreloaded. No spaces in between. And you'll find all those links on my website, soldierspeaks.org.
And I'd just finish with a quote. This is from Catherine Austin Fitz, actually, and that's it's a war on God, but God's going to win. So it may be a rough ride, but I think ultimately you're absolutely right. Right will win out over might, even though the overmighty seem to think they're in charge. I think they've got it coming to them. Adil Raja, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. Always a pleasure.